talking about the subject matter this morning about how will I be remembered, and went back to talk about some things about Joseph from the Old Testament, and certainly as we went through that story, it reminded me once again just how wonderful this young man was, and how he maintained that throughout his life. We're not trying in any way to say he was certainly perfected in the sense of he was sinless. He still needed the blood of Jesus Christ, just like the rest of us do. But as I mentioned in the prayer, certainly we have greater promises, greater everything, according to the Hebrew writer, than they ever had. And especially when you take a man like Joseph. So why was his faith so great? Well, we talked about the fact that what we find is that in Hebrews 11:22 it says, by faith Joseph, when he was dying, and this is what's said about him, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Again, this is what God wanted us to remember him for. And when we look at that again, it just amazes me how much is in that passage. But what we see in this more than anything else, sometimes we're studying these people, we put a lot of emphasis on the person. And what we forget throughout all of this is that what we're really talking about is God. In all of these things we're talking about, it is God's providence. It was God's word that he was obeying. It was everything to do with God. Joseph in and of himself had no idea what to do, did not know how to react, could not understand what was right and wrong, would have behaved badly if not for the fact of God and God's providence through this whole thing. But certainly, if it hadn't been for his confidence in God, his absolute confidence and trust in God, this young man, we wouldn't be talking about him this morning in this way. He, first of all, he believes his dreams come from God. We can see in all of this that even his father can't understand this, but he's very concerned because he understands the meaning of that dream about the sheaves and the sun and the moon and the 11 stars that we discussed. We find that God blesses him and Potiphar because of him. And it says this in Genesis 39, just how 2 through 5, how they were so blessed. But this is God's providence. This, even though Joseph was behaving well, the blessings come from God. And what we find through all of this is that it is God working in the life of Joseph and doing things in Joseph's life that makes all this possible. But again, if not for Joseph's confidence, he still wouldn't be obeying it. We find in Genesis 39:9 that his trust totally is in God. He said to Potiphar's wife, "There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back," talking about Potiphar, "anything from me but you, because you're his wife." And Roger talked about this in the intermission. How then can I do this great wickedness, and sin against God? He was saying, you know, I can't do this. My faith's in him. If he says that's wrong, how did Joseph know that was wrong? How had God revealed this to him? Well, we don't know for sure. We would assume that Jacob had been teaching his sons all along that this particular son gets it. The other 10 seem to be struggling. I don't know about Benjamin at this point, but the other 10 seem to be struggling mightily with this in the fact that they don't understand. We know Benjamin was around and he may have been of equal character. I don't know. But the truth is with this, he's the one that has the faith in God. He's the one that's resisting wickedness all this time. It amazes me to be put through all of this and get stronger as he goes. But doesn't it say something about the chastening of the Lord that he talks about in Hebrews 12? In prison, God's still with him. We see in 39:21-23 that the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. It is God, again, that's doing all of this. Joseph just happens to be one that has that total faith and confidence in him and understands that and understands what this is all about. And it goes on down in verse 23. The Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper while he was in prison. Joseph couldn't have made those things happen. I mean, Joseph being as good as he was, there's no way. So when we look at our own lives, what will be remembered about us? Is it our confidence in understanding God's providence and understanding what all this is happening with this? He understands it's God that will reveal the dream of the butler and the baker. He doesn't take credit for this. He says, I would have no idea. It is God in 40 verse 8. Do not interpretations belong to God? Well, tell them to me, please. He believes that God's with him. And he believes that God will reveal this to him. On the basis of he's deserving of this? No. He understands that. He understands that going through all these hard times and everything he's gone through, that the good times come from God. And that he is going through this for a reason. I'm not sure at this point he fully understands, but he understands that. He said it is God that would interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. We find in 41:16, standing before this most powerful man on earth at the time, he says to him, "It is not me. God will," and get this, "give Pharaoh an answer of peace." That amazes me. That amazes me. In verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do." That Pharaoh, "I couldn't do this." I'm going to tell you who does it. It's God. It's God's providence working in my life. He said, when he approached his brothers and they wondered, how's he going to treat us? What's going to happen to us when he finally revealed himself? They are frightened out of their minds. They understand the position now has suddenly changed. Here they were, the 10 brothers, making him do what they wanted to do, selling him into slavery, threatening to kill him, taking his coat back. And now, everything's not just totally reversed. It's beyond anything they can think of. The second most powerful man in Egypt is saying to them, "Guess what? I'm your brother." Now, if you had the mindset of those brothers, what would your first thought be? Exactly what theirs was. "He's going to kill us. We don't have a chance." And he says, no. He tells them right away. He doesn't even let this linger. He says, "And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth." To preserve a posterity for you in the earth. That's an amazing statement. It is God's providence working in this. Don't you understand? That I'm not blaming anyone. I am praising God. I'm saying to you, and to save your lives by a sort of good deliverance. No, a great deliverance. I didn't come to take your life. I'm not here to wipe you off the face of the earth. I am here because God wants you preserved for a reason. And you know what God's going to do? He's going to preserve them down there in Egypt in a location where they can't get away so that they can grow to be this mighty nation before they go back to Israel to take it back. You see, think of how long it would have taken if they lived in Canaan this whole time and lived there for these many years from the 430 that had happened since Abraham had first talked about this. For them being in captivity for all those years. Think about it. If they had just been back there in Canaan, there's no telling where they would have all ended up. But he fixed it to where they couldn't do that. God's providence is working through all this. He wants them to have a great deliverance. Something that could be talked about for generations to come. That we could never doubt it. That it is God that's doing all of this. So now, it was not you who sent me here. Well, it was. It was them. But he says, but not really. Because if not for God's providence, you couldn't have done it. You see, he's saying God is the one in control. He's controlling everything. Nothing happens that he doesn't allow to happen. And he's made me a father to Pharaoh and lord over all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. So he says, "Hasten and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph." Really, you're going to still claim that man who obviously never came to look for you, it seems. How did Joseph know all this? Joseph doubts none of this. He doesn't blame his father for anything. He doesn't blame his father for the way his brothers treated him. He doesn't say, you couldn't help it because this is the way you were raised. How many times do we hear this today? How many times is there an excuse for the way we grow up? How many times do we blame someone else? He could have easily blamed his father. He could have blamed his mother. He could have blamed everybody. He said, no such thing. You go back and you tell him, your son, Joseph. He didn't say, who used to be your son and I'm not your son anymore. He didn't get upset about that at all. God has made me Lord over all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. He understood the big picture. He understood from beginning to end some things that was going on in his life. And at the end of it, he then tells them, don't leave my bones here. Who cares? Who cares? He does. For 93 years he's lived in this country he didn't want to be in the first place, but he understands the providence of God. He understands the providence of God and all that he had promised Abraham, and he certainly understands some things have been passed on to him. And there's no doubt Jacob had sat down to them since they were young and told them the stories about Abraham and how Abraham had sat there in darkness and understood what was about to happen to them when they went down there and the darkness that was to come on this nation, but yet the great deliverance that was to happen. He understood that the promise had been made, three of them, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to his father Jacob. He believed it with all of his heart. He believed it so much that at 110 years old, and I couldn't find anybody in the room that was that old when I was pointing people out. 110 years old, he says, do not leave my bones here. Don't leave them here. I may not get it while I'm in my lifetime, but by faith I will get it. I will get to go to Canaan. How could he be so certain about this? How could he be so certain? I mean, like was said in the prayer again, Brad, we can be more certain. We have it written down. He did not. This is tremendous faith and confidence in God and God's providence. First, he knew what God had promised to his father, great-grandfather Abraham. He believed from Genesis 12, 1 through 3, that through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed, backing up, that he would receive a land, and that his seed would be like the sands of the sea. He understood and knew all this in the stars of heaven, as he would talk about later, that it would be more than you could ever imagine, even though he didn't have the written word. You see, Joseph couldn't pull this out and go to Pharaoh and said, see, here's the reason I'm doing all this. Read verse so-and-so. The Word of God is alive and powerful. It is so powerful that not one word that comes out of his mouth will not happen the way he has said it would happen. And you know what Joseph said? I believe it. I believe it. Never saw it in his lifetime, but had the faith in it. Second, his own life had proved that God keeps his promises. He didn't die down there. He did exactly what God had in mind. He knew that Israel didn't belong in Egypt. He knew this wasn't the promised land. He knew where Abraham had gone, and this is the land that I will give you and your generations following you, even though Abraham never received it in this lifetime either. So he didn't want his bones there when the Israelites left for Canaan. You see, outwardly he looked like an Egyptian, but inwardly he was a son of Israel and thus the son of God. He was going to believe in this totally. He believed in God first and foremost. He never forgot who he was or where he came from. I know someone used to tell her son all the time when he left, do not forget who you are. That sounds so trite, doesn't it? But this man never forgot who he was. It's not at all. Don't forget who you are. You have been created by God. You are to obey God. You're to believe in God's providence. And you're to live like this so that that's the way you'll be remembered. How can it be so certain? Exodus 13, 19. Did it happen? And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. Wow. I mean, at least 200 or 300 years have passed at this point. Think about this for a moment. They didn't forget. Moses was aware of this, and he said, do not leave it here. Joshua 24. After they went into the land of Canaan and had taken most of it, not all of it, Joshua 24, verse 32. The bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel had brought out of Egypt, they buried at Shechem in the plot of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the son of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and which had become an inheritance of the children of Joseph. This amazes me. Not a one of them forgot this. Why? Because they remembered Joseph. How do you want to be remembered? Boy, a couple hundred years down the road, if I had asked for something to be done and it's still done, that's a memory. And there, his bones rest in the dust of the earth. I don't know where they are, but somewhere there, his bones are there. But there's some things his faith did not allow. His faith did not allow him to ever submit to temptation. Now, I'm not saying that he didn't sin. There was temptation that got him. But what we're picturing today throughout this whole process Think about it. Not once in this whole process that we're studying about did he say, I give in. I give in. I've had enough. His faith did not ever allow him to turn from God or forsake him. He never did, as far as we know. Although imprisoned, forsaken by his family, forsaken by all others, it seems, but not God. He never believed that God had forsaken him. He never believed once that God was not with him through this whole process. That's amazing to me. And even though he was forgotten by Pharaoh's butler, he never gave up. 2 years, it says. And it even says it like this, 2 full years went by. I mean, it's letting us know this was not a small amount of time that his faith remained strong. It's hard. His faith did not allow him to become bitter, even though he's betrayed by his own brothers and sold by them. His faith didn't allow him to seek revenge against his brothers. It was his faith that did all of that. It wasn't because Joseph understood and knew things way beyond the rest of us other than he knew God. But his tremendous faith was based on some promises first given to his great-grandfather. Think about that. Where's our faith? What could be said about us? His faith, though, did not even allow him to waver when death came. As a matter of fact, the Bible tells us in Hebrews 11:22 again, it was at his greatest when he died. How many of us reach a point and go, that's enough? Not him. All the way up to his death. He believed. He had kept this one thing in his mind the whole time. One day we're leaving here. He knew that they would be in captivity, as had been told by Abraham, that God had told Abraham that. But he also knew that God would keep his promise, that one day they would go out of there. One day they would be have that country that God had promised them, and one day they would have all these things. Can you imagine the questions that were asked by, say, some of the young people as they're carrying this coffin through the wilderness? Here they are fleeing out of this land. And they took the time to go get a coffin and carry it all the way to Canaan. Now we realize they didn't go into Canaan at that time. So they carried it for another 40 years. Or 40 years total. Think about that for a moment. Can you imagine a young person going up and going, what is in that box? Can you imagine the faith then that was passed on? That's Joseph's bones. We're taking them with us. Many of them had their bones buried in the wilderness. They never got there. They never kept the faith. And it says they were buried there. Even Miriam was buried there, outside of this land. That tells you the difference in faith. That tells you the difference in a promise, and that tells you the difference in what a person believes in. The strength that they have in that belief. So, what does this teach us? I think we could go through multiple lessons, but we're only going to talk about a few things. We find that really the greatest thing we can pass on to our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren is our faith. Oh, we can't give them our faith, but we can sure demonstrate our faith. We can sure let them know that we have something, that we want our bones taken away from here one of these days, and again, putting the parentheses around it, that one day we look for something, one day we totally believe that God will keep His promise to us. You see, Joseph had this opportunity to pass it on as it had been passed on to him. As it went from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, by word of mouth. We find in Genesis 50:23 that here he is with Ephraim and the children to the third generation. And we find that he's holding Manasseh's children on his knee. Do you think Joseph just sat there and petted them and gave them all the things that they wanted in life? I do not think so at all. I think he passed his faith on to them. Did they have that kind of faith? I can't say that they did. I don't know. Did it go to that third generation? I don't know. They had a choice to make themselves. But I can tell you this. They had a beautiful example of one who had tremendous faith. They, like us, know. They knew what Joseph stood for and what his faith accomplished with God. Can you imagine him telling them about what had happened to him And how through this whole thing he believed in God. You see, the saddest thing that can happen to us at any age is to become bitter. When we get bitter, we just do not see the big picture anymore. We suddenly narrow our sight down and we can't see. Our life is so bad that, don't you understand? No, we should never. We should always understand God's providence and everything in our life. And we should look at that. Even though he knew, he didn't deserve this fate. He says, and he told them in Genesis 40, verse 15, in talking to the butler and the baker. He said, for indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me in this dungeon. He understood that. Just like Jesus Christ totally understood that he did nothing to deserve being put on that cross as far as any thing, a law he'd broken or anything that he'd done wrong. He understood that. I'm not, again, comparing the two. One's obviously much greater than the other. But with Joseph, he understood that. But it didn't make him bitter because he believed in God. And you've been studying Ruth on Wednesday night. It's unlike a Ruth who became very bitter. She just did not think that things had gone well with her. And she didn't just blame people. Here's what she said about it, 19 through 22. She did not see the big picture. She lost focus. Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. That's talking about Ruth and Naomi. And it happened when they came to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? And can you imagine the excitement in their face? They haven't seen her for a long time. And they're saying, is this Naomi? And you'd think her response to that was, yes, and I am so thankful to be back. I am so happy to come back to my country that my bones got to come back. But no. She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? She can't see the big picture at this point. I have nothing against Naomi. More of us, I'd say, are more like Naomi than we are like a Joseph. You see, one God saw God always. Joseph saw God always in everything and thus had no problem with it. And the other lost God for a while. Naomi's going to get to see it. I know you guys are studying this, and it's just so beautiful, the providence of God in all this. And suddenly it'll come to her. But she doesn't get it at this point. The happiest thing is to remember that God's plan is greater than we are. We lose the picture because it's me. Me, me, me. It's Abe. And I can't see, as we use the terminology, the forest for the trees. But if I can look at the big picture of what's going on, I can be happy. You see, Naomi was locked into that moment. She couldn't get past that moment. I've lost my husbands. I've lost my sons. Oh, but do you realize what you have gained? No. No. She does not understand. She's going to, but she does not. She saw only what she had lost. She failed to see what she had gained. So many times we're thinking of what we've lost and not what we gain. We all lose things. I'm not talking about our car keys. We all lose things, but look at what we gain in life. Look at what God has given us. Look what we're blessed with. Now later, she will know what God has planned for her all the time. And she actually saw some of it in her lifetime. That's great faith. Naomi has great faith. But let me tell you something. Joseph's faith stands out. He saw the big picture. Throughout all, he understood. I'm just one human being going through this life, and all I'm here for is to serve God. And in my service to God, whatever He puts out there is going to be better for everyone else. You remember what He said? He didn't say this has turned out better for me. He was saying what was going to happen to all the people and how God had laid this plan out. And he only saw Cana by faith at this point. He couldn't get out the window there and look over and see the land of Cana. It was totally by faith. And even if he lived there, he knew he would not possess that land. He knew that was not going to happen for a while. But eventually, Joseph knew he would possess that land in his own way. You see, he saw salvation by faith and not by sight. That's amazing to me. You see, in life, the sower may die, but the seed lives on. What we have in life is something amazing that, again, Brad used in his prayer. This is in talking about these people. He didn't use these two in particular, but by faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous. God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead still speaks. Joseph still speaks to us today. Now, how will I be remembered? Someone once made this comment. They said when they were born, they cried and everybody else laughed and rejoiced. And at death, we rejoice and everyone else cries. That's an amazing thing, the two ends of our life. And when we think about it, how will I be remembered? Will I have passed my faith on? I can't. I can only live my faith and I can talk about it and try. But I can't give it to anybody else. Their faith has to be theirs. Just like a Joseph had, comparatively speaking, with his brothers. Will I be remembered for my faith or for my bitterness? The hand that I was dealt just wasn't the one I wanted. Will I make sure others know that I firmly believe in the plan of God, that God has for mankind? That plan that He established before time began. So I will end it with, then how will you be remembered? If you have any needs, please let us know. Would you please stand?